This is basically going to be like a class with some chavrusa, because that's how I roll and that's how I like to teach. I think it helps us learn better. So with your permission, we're going to do that even though we're in a group. Does everybody have a sheet? Raise your hand if you do not have a sheet. Okay, great. So a little introduction to what we're going to learn today. I want to introduce you to one of the gedolim in Machshava of our past generation, whose name is Rav Yitzchak Huttner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Has anyone here heard of Rav Huttner?
Yeah.
Excellent. Who can tell me where he was from, or where he lived, or what yeshiva he was in, or anything about him? Zahava.
Isn't he the Rosh Yeshiva at one point?
Not that I know of. I don't think so. Unless I'm... Maybe I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I missed that part of his life. I'm not sure. From what I know about him, he was born in Poland. And what's interesting about Rav Huttner is that he had lineage from Hasidic family and also Misnagdic. Misnagdic is like the opposite of Hasid, Litvish kind of thing. So in his teachings, he's sort of like a mix of both. And he was a Rosh Yeshiva of a Litvish yeshiva, but he was also sort of like a Hasidic Rebbe for his Talmidim at the same time, which makes his works very interesting and challenging as well. So Rav Huttner was born in Poland. He learned in Slabodka and in Yeshivat Chevron in Israel, which used to be in Chevron and is now, anyone know where? Right, in my neighborhood, in Givat Mordechai, so you can all come visit Yeshivat Chevron. He learned also under Rav Kook, and then Lahavdil, he learned in University of Berlin with, who else? Anyone know who he learned with in the University of Berlin? You want to guess?
The Rav.
The Rav, that's right. Chaim Leibowitz. And Lubavitcher Rebbe. They were like a foursome over there in University of Berlin. So he has a very strong background in many areas of learning. In the 1930s, he came to Brooklyn, which is also where I'm from. Who's from Brooklyn? Yay, Brooklyn. And he started there and was a Rosh Yeshiva for the rest of his life of a very chashuv yeshiva called Yeshivat Chaim Berlin. And that's where he was for the rest of his life. So Rav Huttner, among other things, has a set of machshava svarim called the Pachad Yitzchak. His name was Rav Yitzchak Huttner, called the Pachad Yitzchak. Pachad Yitzchak goes by ma'amarim, like articles. It is very difficult. So what I want to do today is introduce you to Rav Huttner's works. We're not going to just read through it because it's very hard. So what I tried to do is sort of like process it a little bit, like chew it up for you a little bit, so that we can, on the one hand, get the beauty of his works, and on the other hand, be able to understand it and follow. It does get a little bit esoteric and tricky towards the end, so I'm going to ask you really to like focus and stay with me. But I think we'll be able to do it, and hopefully we'll gain a lot from it. The general style of Rav Huttner's works is that he'll start with a question that seems to be very... like lamdas, you know, like a Gemara, questioning halacha, that kind of thing. And then, in order to answer that question, he like dives deep into a sea of machshava and Kabbalistic ideas, a lot from the Maharal, really going all over the place in Torah. And then at the end, he comes back and answers those questions with this machshava idea that he developed. So we're going to try to follow him today. And what we want to look at, since it's Hanukkah, is Yavan and Yisrael. Because unlike other enemies that we've had, Yavan was very unique and different. And their effects and their influences of their culture are still plaguing us today. The whole world, the Western world, is very influenced still by the Greek culture. And we want to look at what was it about Yavan that was so powerful that made them a different type of enemy. They weren't just, I want to kill you all because you're Jews and I hate you. Okay? So, everyone ready to start?
Yeah.
Excellent. So look in the source sheet at source number one. We have a famous Gemara here, Masechet Shabbos. Who wants to read this Gemara for us? Daphna.
Okay. Rav Amar
in Dvarim Yedayin, Malet Tassur, Nechemia Amar Dvarim Yedibet, Sha'al of Yucha, Vayigadach, Zakanacha, Vayimru Lacha.
Excellent, thank you. This is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, where it talks about the mitzvah of Hadlakas Ner Hanukkah. Right? Many of us have seen this Gemara. So the Gemara begins, Mai Mevarich. Rebecca, are there sheets behind you? Whoever just came in, you have to be sitting next to the Chavrusa, because we're going to have some Chavrusa. We'll just wait a minute so everyone can come in and settle. Yeah, extra? You also have extra? There's some extra sheets over there in the back if anybody needs. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Mai Mevarech, what bracha do we say? And the question is, what bracha do we say on Neros Chanukah? And the answer is the bracha that we all know, Asher Kiddushanu B'Misotav Tzivanu La'adlik Ner Shel Chanukah. The Gemara has a problem. What's the problem with this bracha that we say on Neros Chanukah? Excellent! Neros Chanukah, as we all know, is a mitzvah d'Rabbanan, right? How do we know that it's a mitzvah d'Rabbanan? Excellent, because Chanukah didn't happen until way later. And yet, when we light the candles, we say, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu la'adlik ner Chanukah, which means that God commanded us to light the Chanukah candles. God never commanded us to light the Chanukah candles, guys. Who did? Rabbanan. So the question that the Gemara is asking is, Heichad tzivanu, how can you say a bracha, like, where did God command you? That's an inappropriate bracha. And they give two answers. Both are psukim in the Torah. One is Lo Tasur, and the other is She'al Avicha V'yagedcha Zekeinecha V'yomer Lach. Is anyone familiar with the pasuk of Lo Tasur? Yeah. What is it?
You can't go against what the rabbis dictate.
Excellent. So if God told me to listen to the rabbis, and the rabbis told me to light the Chanukah candles, A equals B and B equals C, so says the Gemara, then I can say that God commanded me to light the Chanukah candles. Okay? From that pasuk Lo Tasur. The other option is She'al Avicha V'yagedcha Zekeinecha V'yomer Lach, which means ask your forefathers, meaning you have to follow the tradition that was set, and that's where we learn it from. Another sort of twist on the same theme. Can you give a sheet? Okay. So this is the Gemara. It's not so complicated, okay? I want everyone now to take 2 minutes and read source number 2, where he asks a question on this Gemara. Okay, do it with your chavrusa.
Thank you.
you didn't finish. Who can explain to us what is bothering Rav Kundner on this Gemara? Leia.
Why do we have a problem with like saying Mitzivanu specifically here with Hanukkah, also Drabanan, we all say Mitzivanu and we have a problem there.
Excellent. So I'll rephrase your question a little bit and say as follows. There are a lot of Drabanan mitzvot that we say Asher Kiddushanu on, such as?
Megillah.
Louder. Mikra Megillah. Halal. Al Netilat Yadayim. There's a lot of them. The Gemara asks this question one time, because it wants to know one time how I can say Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvotav V'tzivanu on a Drabanan. And the one time that it chose was Ner Hanukkah. Says Rav Kundner, why? There are a lot of other them. Why did you choose this one? And even if you're going chronologically, Mikra Megillah came before. My kids came home yesterday and they're like, Ima, did you know that Purim happened before Hanukkah? I was like, yes, I did know that. Why is that so surprising to you? I was like, Mordechai wrote Mao's Tzur. So we hopefully all know that. Megillah came before Hanukkah. And there's a whole Masechet called Megillah. And there's not a whole Masechet on Hanukkah. So why don't you ask by Mikra Megillah this question of Heichan Tzivanu? On Mikra Megillah, we also say, Asher Kiddushanu Nisav Tzivanu. Al Mikra Megillah. So why don't you ask over there, why specifically on Hanukkah? Now this seems like an innocuous sort of question, but what Rav Kundner does is takes this question and develops a huge building in Machshava that we're going to learn today from this question. Okay, so that's question number one. Question number two, if you look at source number three, is as follows. In Al Hanisim, we say, if you look in the beginning, Kishe'amda malchut yavan harisha'a al amcha Yisrael, lehashkicham toratecha ulehaaviram mechukei ratzonecha. Somebody translate that line that I just read from Al Hanisim. Basia.
When the kingdom of the Greeks, like the evil kingdom of the Greeks, set up against Bnei Israel to make them forget their Torah and to go against the laws of their of what they wanted to do.
Excellent. So Frieder's question here is, he's bothered by the double lashon. He says, if the Greeks wanted to make us forget God's Torah, lechora, they wanted to make us stop learning Torah, right? Learning Torah is one of the mitzvot. It's even one of the most important mitzvot. So if I tell you that they wanted to leha'aviram mechukei ratzonecha, it means that the Greeks wanted to get us to stop doing God's commandments. Isn't learning Torah included in God's commandments? Why do I have to have a separate phrase in Al Hanisim? They wanted me to forget my Torah, and secondly, stop doing God's commandments. He says, Lichora, it should be included. Okay? And they should only have one phrase. The Greeks wanted us to stop doing mitzvos and zeh. So these are his two questions. Number one, why does the Gemara ask Heichan Tzivanu on a Drabanan, specifically by Ner Hanukkah? And number two, why is Lehashkicham Toratecha not included in Lehaviram Mechukei Ratzonecha? Okay, those are his two questions. And now we turn the page and we start to learn a little bit about the unique relationship between Yavan and Yisrael. Okay, can anybody tell me where is Yavan found in the Torah? The word, no hints, no fancy anythings. Where is the nation of Yavan found in the Torah? Okay. No. Think again. Yes, which one? You know this. You know. Yefet. Excellent. Okay, Yavan comes from Noah, comes from Yefet. So it's a nation that we see in the Torah. Comes from Yefet. What do we know about Yefet?
Beauty.
Who can quote the pasuk for me? There should be like 21 of you who can quote the pasuk for me. Tiferet?
I can't quote it. But
he's blessed with like the yes, Yaft, Elohim, Yefet. Beautiful. Okay. So let's look now and see that in Chazal we see a sort of contradictory approach to Yavan. Were they good or were they bad? So everybody take 1 minute now and learn the Bereishit Rabbah in number 4 and tell me if this is positive about Yavan or negative about Yavan. Okay, guys, what did you find out? What do we see here about... What do we see here about Galu Yavan? What are they compared to? Choshech. Would that be a positive thing or a negative thing? Very negative. And the way it's put is, Shehechshichu einehem shel Yisrael b'gzerotehem. Shehaitah omeret lehem kitva al keren hashor she'ein lechem chilek b'elkei Yisrael. They wanted B'nai Yisrael to write on a keren hashor, on an ox's horn, Ein lachem chelek be'elokei Yisrael, that we have no part in Elokei Yisrael. What that means, there's a lot of premise to that. Shor is like Yosef, Bechor Shor, and there's a whole Torah on that, which we won't discuss today. But it was definitely a very negative thing, that by them being gozer on B'nai Yisrael to stop the mitzvot that they were gozer, they darkened their eyes because we couldn't take part in Torah and mitzvot, etc. So that's a very negative thing. Okay, let's look at number 5 now. The pasuk that we just quoted. In the blessings that Noach gives his children after that very funny story where he drinks the wine, he says to them, Yaft Elokim leyefet v'yishkon be'ohalei Shem v'hikna'an eved lamo. Yaft Elokim leyefet literally means God will beautify Yefet. All of the mefarshim, from Unkelus all the way down, like everybody who I saw, explains it as Yarchiv, that God will expand Yefet, okay, which means that the Greek Empire basically took over the whole world in their time, and they did, and as we said, they continue to influence our world today, so God expanded their borders, okay? But it's Yaft Elokim Liyefet V'yishkon Be'ohal Hashem. There's still some connection with Am Yisrael. So the question is here, is this a positive connection, or is it a negative connection? So if you look at number 6, the Gemara in Megillah tells us something very different. Who wants to read for us the Gemara in Megillah? It's not a hard Gemara. It's an easy Gemara to read. Gabby, go for it. Very well done. What does Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel learn from this pasuk? He learns a halacha specific to the Greek language from this pasuk. Who can tell me what it is? You can take a peek at Rashi by yourselves and try to figure it out. Leia? You have the right factors, but you flipped it a little bit. Can I try again? You're allowed to write Sifrei Kodesh in Greek. Okay? You're not allowed to write Sifrei Kodesh in another language, but you are allowed to write it only in one other language besides Hebrew, and that is Greek. And if you look in Rashi, he says, Yafyuto shel yefet hu lashon yavan lishono yefet mishel kol b'nei yefet. In some way, the Greek language, anyone here know Greek? No, me neither, so I can't vouch for it. But Rashi and Chazal tell us that the Greek language is so beautiful that it's the only other language that we're allowed to write Sifrei Kodesh in. And that's the meaning of the pasuk, Yaft Elokim liyefet v'yishkon bo'hal Hashem. Yaf yuto shel yefet, yefet's beauty can dwell in Shem's tent. Which means that Yefet's beauty, which is his language, the Greek language, which is beautiful, is allowed to come into the Ohel Shel Torah. Okay? This is something very unique to the Greek language, and it's a huge compliment to them. They're the only ones that we let in. So this is very positive. This is very different than the Brishi Rabba that tells us that the Greeks are compared to Choshech because they darken their eyes. This is saying that we can use the Greek language for Torah, for Sifrei Kodesh, because it's a beautiful language, and assumingly, it doesn't just mean that it sounds pretty. It probably has some depth and some meaning to it. Okay? Everyone take a minute now and read number 7. This is another excerpt from the Pachad Yitzchak. Read it with your chevruses. Okay, everyone stop. If you look at the last line in what you just read, Rav Hunter points out that there's this contradictory and unique sort of relationship between Yavan and Yisrael. And he says in the last line, Rak ha'ofi ha'miyuchad sheyesh la lihitnagduta shel Yavan Yisrael, hu ha'makor le'yachas kaful zeh. The special characteristic of the relationship of the hitnagdut, opposition of Yavan to Yisrael is what makes for this dual relationship, which means that there's something different about this enemy that enables us to also have a positive relationship with him at the same time. And we're going to explain. Turn over the page. You should see now on top source number 8. Everyone see source number 8 on top? Question?
Yeah.
Yes.
It kind of sounds like modern Orthodoxy.
How so?
Because it's like mixing the positives of Shane and the girl. And like, but like, Yafes besides the tent. Meaning it's not that Yafes takes over the tent, but you're saying.
Yeah, you're definitely hitting upon something. We're not going to go into that now, but you're definitely hitting. People talk about Hanukkah and Hellenism, and they talk a lot about modern Orthodoxy, and that, you know, you're definitely touching upon something. Let's go on, and you'll understand it more even. Okay, so Rav Hunter says here in number 8. He says, we learn from the Nevi'im, there's a pasuk that says, Yesharim darchei Hashem, tzadikim yalchu bam, poshtim yikashlu bam. Hashem's ways are straight. Tzadikim will go on them, and sinners will fall on them. And he says, usually, if we take the mashal of a path for life, you have the good guys going this way on the path, and you have the bad guys going this way on the path. Okay? The good people are going towards the light, towards doing God's will, and the bad people, simply put, the Rishayim, are going this way, doing bad things, going to Gehenna, however you want to put it. They're going in opposite directions. And he says, usually, when you have enemies, it's because they're opposite. They're going in opposite directions. You have the Jews who are into Torah and Ruchnius, and then you have the Hamans who are into killing people and hating us and destruction. And you can take that with all of our enemies where we had very opposing values. And usually it's because we're going on opposite paths. But if you look in the middle of what he says, four lines down, the line starts with the word aval. Everyone look for that for a minute. He says, aval yesh asher hitnagdut bein hatov vehara hi amuka yoter. Sometimes this clash between good and evil is deeper. It's not so simple. Dehainu kasher al hagoven yesh lishnehem oto hakivun. Gets tricky when the good guy and the bad guy are walking in the same direction on the path. It's not so clear that they're opposites. They're not walking in opposite directions. They're walking on the same path, and they're walking in the same direction. So adim hem shnehem al gabe oto hashvil atzmo. Umikol makom ze holech komimut veze nichshal. However, one of them, hopefully the tzaddik, is walking upright, and the rasha will falter and fall. But unlike other enemies, they're walking on the same path and they're walking in the same direction. He says, "Dafka oto partzuf shel hara asher nekudat hamagash shelo ematov mirubot hen bioter." Dafka, when we have an enemy who is much closer to us, more similar to us in a certain way, not as opposite, that's a much deeper and uglier kind of enemy. And he gives the mashal that when two family members fight, it's usually a really nasty situation. Why? Because they're not total opposites. They're not like good and evil going in opposite directions. They have similarities, they rub together, and then when they have a fight, it's much deeper and it's much worse than two neighbors who have a fight because this one doesn't like where you park your car. Okay? Limashal. But we're talking now about nations. And when we get to the nation of Greece, the ancient Greeks, he says that ancient Greece, the Yevanim, as we saw in Chazal, don't clash as opposite with Am Yisrael as everyone else did. There's a certain similarity. And because of that similarity, we're close, we're walking on the same path, and yet we still clash. And that kind of clash goes very deep and makes it a very messy battle. So to understand what this clash is, look in number 9, where we have here a quote from the Maharal Sefer called Ner Mitzvah. I want you to learn this b'chevrusa and to understand in what way are Yavon and Yisrael similar and why does this cause contention? Why not that we should just be friends since we're so similar? Okay, so take a few minutes now and look at number 9.
Thank you.
guys, what did you learn from here? What was so special about Yavan as opposed to all of our other enemies? Gabby.
Because they wanted the Torah to be written in Hebrew, because they, like, saw the truth.
Very good. What aspect, if you could give me one word that they shared with Am Yisrael?
Chachma.
Most enemies that Am Yisrael has been like polar opposites. Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov wants spirituality. Esav wants the physical world. He wants all the money. He wants all the physical world. Usually, that's how we approached our enemies. That's why the enemies hated us. They hated that we were spiritual. They hated that we were people of the book. They hated everything. They wanted us to be like them, worshiping physicality, running after materialism, just like a regular plain person. Now the Greeks, not that they were tzaddikim, they were not, they had a lot of moral mis-everything. They were really bad morally. But what they did have was chachma. We have some of that today in our science and in our math. Still comes from the ancient Greeks. But they loved chachma. They loved wisdom. Wisdom is not a physical thing. It's a spiritual thing. It's a step above all the material things that people run after. However, they differed from Am Yisrael in one very important respect. And that was the spiritual aspect. They wanted the chachma without the godliness. So we see from here that Yavan has a dual aspect to them. Mitzad echad, there's something positive, the chachma, which is why we're allowed to write the Torah in Yavanit. Mitzad sheni, hechshichu inem shal Yisrael. They said, write that you don't have a chilek in Elokei Yisrael. Why? Because we don't want you to have spirituality. The Greeks, as opposed to any other nation, did not want to kill us. What did they want to do? They wanted to assimilate us. And that's the famous question. You know, if Hanukkah was now, would you be a Greek? Would you be a Hellenist? Or would you be a Maccabee? And it's not so clear, unfortunately. You should all rethink your values and see what you think the answer would be. The Jews were running after the Greeks by the hordes. The Maccabees were the mute. There were many Hellenists. Why weren't there Bavliists and Persianists and Nimrodists and whatever other enemies? Why in those nations where we had enemies did you not have Jews running after to assimilate with them?
They wanted to kill us, not...
Yeah, number one, they wanted to kill us. Number two, there was nothing there that drew the Jew in. But in the Greek culture, they were into chachma. And we're also into chachma. We're a match. The Jews are the people of the book. The Greeks were also people of the book. That's why they asked us to translate the Torah into Greek. They wanted to put it in their library.